So this evening we'll be continuing with our exploration of the paramis, the qualities of the mind, heart, that the Buddha developed over his many lifetimes. Last week we looked at dana, which is most often translated as generosity or giving. And this week we'll be looking at nikkhamma, most commonly translated as renunciation. And we'll get there in a little bit, but I just want to see if anyone wanted to share briefly something they learned from their exploration of generosity in the past week.
It's sort of like keeping a gratitude journal. It made me happier to be looking for the positives. Just happier in general.
Great. So it's like keeping a gratitude journal, just looking for the positives. She was more likely to see it and feel better. Wonderful. Mary?
It was interesting to listen to the self-talk.
Yes.
You know, that the whole business of mixed motives. And how some things would just really feel very spontaneous.
Mm-hmm.
And the other one, there had to be kind of a little nudge.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
You know, and it could be, it could just be being generous with listening to someone when you really didn't want to, and not saying anything because nothing you said would be good, and being generous not to say anything.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to really be mindful in order to do that, and to do it without having it be sticky.
Yeah, great to be able to see all of that stuff that happens there. I mean, even being able to see the stickiness is useful, very useful. Yes, Alice?
I just remember that you said something about connectedness, and so when I think about that as the umbrella of the paramis, it's really helpful because I can choose to either be disconnected or connected to somebody based on that umbrella. So if I am thinking that I'm going to be a little stingy, is that going to make me more connected to somebody else, or is it going to make me more disconnected? And then it's so obvious, the choice is much easier. Connectedness.
Yes.
My friends, I didn't hear the talk last week, but I can tell you what's been profound for me regarding generosity is just allowing oneself to be available to participate in life, whether it's with you, her, me, and without trying to determine whether this is going to be a rewarding experience, to be to participate in somebody else's life, helping them with a need or just being there to listen. It seems like it happens. I don't mean to look for opportunities to be generous. They seem to present themselves to me all day long. And if I'm available, I get a chance to participate, I always walk away with an esteemed memory or a grateful memory that I don't even really want to say a grateful memory. It's always rewarding to look back and recognize an opportunity that I had to participate in somebody else's life.
Great. Well, I'm really glad to hear everybody's takes on this. That's wonderful. I'm sure those of you who did not speak also have experiences of generosity, and I encourage you to continue to engage with those. So this week I'll be speaking about renunciation. It's the third parami. First is dana, or generosity, and then sila, or ethical conduct. And then the third is nikkhamma, or renunciation. And we started off last week with a question, and I'd like to do the same thing this week. Oftentimes when people hear renunciation, they have certain kinds of thoughts or feelings about the word, and I just want to go around and hear from people, hear what does renunciation mean to you? If you just hear like a word or brief phrase, and when you hear renunciation, what does that mean to you?
Letting go.
Letting go. Are you raising your hand?
Letting go, but resisting letting go is, you know, it's like I have to renounce something that I really want.
Letting go, but you but resisting letting
and
go.
So I went to a book that I have
Actually, I just want to hear the really brief thought on what that is. That is good for now.
What I discovered was, oh, the letting go can really be a path to freedom. Mm. And that was a lot better than my original prejudice.
Okay.
Giving up. I mean, not like I give up, I can't do it, but I have to give something up.
Uh-huh. Okay, so giving something up, yeah.
Yeah.
Giving up or getting something up. Patty.
Accepting loss with grace.
Accepting loss with grace.
Coming from a Catholic religious upbringing, it has a really negative connotation for me. Like the renunciates, they gave up all these things in their life, and it was really difficult. And it's not something that I aspire to.
Gotcha. It's not something she aspires to. holier than thou.
Well, no, but I mean, it's very drastic. You know, it's just renunciation for me just has a negative connotation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. I'm seeing some nods here. Let's go here.
Well, based on Philip's teachings, my background with that is my experience of renunciation. Mm-hmm. So to me, it's a positive, active choice.
Mm-hmm. Positive, active choice.
I got it from Joko Beck, actually, listening to an audio tape. And she talks about that as a stripping away, so there's a simplicity in that.
Uh-huh. Stripping away so there's a simplicity and clarity. Okay. So thank you all for your ideas here, those of you who spoke and those of you who did not. So the Pali word is nekama. And I was listening to a talk by Gil Fronsdal, and this is a compound word. The Pali word is a compound word. The verb kama, which is totally different from the other word kama that we think of. This is K-H-A-M-M-A. It comes from a different root. And it means to walk or to go. And then ne means out. So the word means to walk out or go out. And it has this sense of spaciousness to it. I've heard Gil describe it in this one talk as if you'd been in a one-room cabin with your family all winter, snowed in, and then the thaw came in the spring, and you were able to go outside. So this sense of kind of freedom, of spaciousness there. And, you know, I think that's a great thing. I think, like you, Linda, and I'm sure like others here in the room, I was raised Catholic. And for Lent, we had to give something up. And for me, at least the way I took this in, the way I internalized it, the purpose was not about the learning or anything like that. It was about somehow about the giving up and being holier for the not having this thing or something like that. Being without was going to make you more whole.
Information.
Yeah. Now, I'm not suggesting that that's the root of the teaching around giving something up for Lent, but that was how I internalized it. It was a little bit more like suffering through that would somehow, that was how you're going to get your points. So the Buddha talked about that. One of the Buddha's other teachings was about the eight vicissitudes, which are these qualities that it said we all get in our lives. We all get all of them. And they are, they're sometimes referred to as the eight worldly winds or the terrible twins. And they are praise and blame, pleasure and pain, gain and loss, and fame and disrepute. We get all of them. Yeah? We all get all eight. And, you know, if we're all getting all of them, then putting our stock as we normally do, we generally like the first ones of those pairs, right? We like the pleasure, the gain, the praise, the fame. Kind of like, oh, okay, well, I don't really want the fame, just a real little bit of fame. You know, but if we're getting all of them, and we're subject to all of them, and they all arise and pass, they're just not very reliable, right? By definition. They're not very reliable. And yet, we most frequently live our lives around how do we get more of the first and less of the second? You know, this is really often how we construct our lives. So the fact that we're conditioned to get more of the first and less of the second, that is not a problem. There is no problem with that at all. Renunciation, nekama, I think is based on giving up, on putting all our eggs in the basket of gain. You know? That we're not going to gain everything. Or gain and loss. We're saying, you know what? There is gain and loss, and I'm not going to build the foundation of my life on that. Yeah? But that's not a reliable place. It's seductive to build it around that, you know? If I could just get that better job, or that. I'm not in any way suggesting that it's not appropriate during our lives in the world to look for better jobs. I'm not suggesting that. But there's this idea, I think, that we often have that there's something outside of us that's going to make us happy. You know, a bigger bank account, a really good meal, good sex, a great relationship for the Warriors to win. I take it most of you are not Warriors fans here tonight, is that accurate?
No. Please.
You are?
Okay. Of course.
But more committed to the Dhamma than the Warriors. Wow. Lions for the Dhamma. Wonderful. Okay. Could be that, you know, the thing that we really fantasize about for the Republicans to win next year, or, you know, whatever it is for you. The next text message. This really great text. Or that game. I have this game on my phone. I really just want to play it one more time. We spend a lot of our time and energy going after the next thing. Yeah. Ajahn Sumedho used to talk about an alarm clock. You know, it's useful and nice to have. You know, I'm gonna tear this off the Velcro. Here's my clock here, right? And you know, and he says, and let's say you have and you hold it in your outstretched arm, and you hold on to it tightly. You know, okay, that's fine. But after a while, it gets. Okay, this is a little tiring. I can do this for longer. I can hang out here for a while. And, you know, then it's going to get more tiring. And that kind of thing. Because I've got to hold on to it. I've got to make it mine or keep it mine. Put it back to its rightful place there. And, you know, that's grasping. And we all do that throughout our days. We have that idea, you know, I could just put this alarm clock down. And that is the letting go. That is the renunciation there. And I would argue that renunciation is not about the object being let go of, but it's about the letting go itself. So it's about that felt sense. What is that internal experience of letting go? I spent some time many years ago, a brief period of time as a monk in Burma. And as a monk, one of the things that we had to give up was being sexual. And, you know, it was a requirement that made it easier. Everybody else was doing that. It was fine. I mean, you know, fine enough. Okay? After a couple of months, I realized how much more steady my energy was. Just all of the energy that I put into this fantasizing, or does this person like me? Does that person like me? Could I go out with this person? What, you know? All of that had just been let go of. And it was such a relief. It was really a relief. Of course, being heterosexual, I was primarily around other monks. You know, I wasn't seeing women that often. The ones I was seeing were fully clothed. Burma's a pretty chaste country. You know, I don't know what my experience would have been like if I were gay and being around all the other men and knows? But for me, a real sense of ease developed. And as I talked about, as I just mentioned, there was really a sense of having more energy. And that really came about through renunciation, through the letting go of that. So as opposed to being harsh or restrictive with yourself, and I'm not, if you notice that you're in any way that your relationship to renunciation is that way, maybe you can play with that and tease that apart and see, is that really what renunciation is about? Ajahn Suchitto, which my talk last week and my talk this week have both been significantly influenced by his book on the Paramis, as he says, with renunciation, you could call it simplification. You know, just that sense of simplifying. Now, he's a monk. And another quote from his book. And he says, it's important to keep reviewing what is necessary, using reflections such as, what I get in terms of my mind states is the result of how I act. You know, now, we all have the mind states that we have. I was hesitant to read that because I think it's, I don't want people to take that as a way of being blamed or blamey or blame yourself or feel like I'm blaming you. Over time, as we practice, we start to see how our actions condition our mind states. Yeah, this is the law of karma that the Buddha spoke of. You know, what is it, how we act? If we act with a lot of generosity, in general, we feel a freer heart. We feel more of that sense of connectedness. Who was it who talked about connectedness? Alice. That sense of connectedness. If we, you know, just all the positive stuff that brings to our life. If we're doing metta a lot, we tend to have that freer heart. Right? And we're doing these things in a skillful way. Now, it's not skillful with generosity to give away everything that you have, or to give away in a way that causes harm to yourself. But this can be a really useful reflection. You know? I was just a little bit ago reflecting on this song that I had going through my mind, which had these kind of negative lyrics, you know? And it was like, oh yeah, well, I was listening to that song. I remember listening to that song recently. And, you know, was I feeding that in some way? Oh yeah, probably. You know, just says that where we have some choice about where we put our attention and our intention, and that that makes a difference. We have some say in that. That's really kind of part of what the Buddha, the freedom that the Buddha was pointing to. Okay. So some of the advantages of renunciation or of nekkamma are it helps us get over our sense of lack. It can really help us through this sense of letting go. We can be more present just with things as they are. We can get over that sense of lack that we have. It can help us connect with contentment. Yeah? The sense that this moment is enough just as it is. Yeah. When we let go of something, we can do that. Last week I spoke a little bit about the floods, the flood of sensuality, the floods of becoming, flood of views, and the flood of ignorance. And how these are kind of these almost fundamental mind states that we have, that where we get caught up in sensuality, that sense pleasure, that pleasant sights or smells or tastes or sounds, or mind states are going to make us happier, that we have to get them. That if we become this better person, you know, if I got this next job or this next relationship or if I get this other thing, I'll become this other person. It's all these ways in which we try to feed these, we have these fantasies all the time of how I'm going to be or what I'm going to be in the future or what I'm not going to be in the future. How can I get rid of this unpleasant state now? I saw this ugly thing about myself. I went through this unpleasant experience. Get it away from me. So the paramis can be a really great support for working with these kinds of states in the mind. You know, there's always stuff going on that we can explore in the moment. And if we notice that this sense of wanting to get something or wanting to get rid of something or some fantasy about ourselves in the future, either a positive fantasy or a negative fantasy, or trying to get rid of this sense of ourselves in the moment, or how we've gotten stuck or caught on our views, our ideas about how things should be, our beliefs, our opinions. If we notice this, then instead what we can do is we can turn our attention back to what our experience is in the moment. Yeah. And just come back to what this experience is. We don't have to get rid of anything in our experience. Now, there are times when we get really overwhelmed. At those times, take a break. But otherwise, we can simply take our time to just continue to fold our attention back into our experience, our direct experience in the moment. Our experience in the body, our experience in the mind. I think by and large, I don't know how great we do this. I think often, you know, Philip talks about, or has talked about, Philip Moffat. Does anybody not know Philip Moffat? Okay. He talks, in his book Dancing with Life, he talked about how the first noble truth, how we really just need to really fully be with dukkha, really feel the ouch of our dukkha. We don't need to go seek out any extra dukkha. Life will bring us plenty, our fair share. But that we really need to feel the ouch of it. And he also says that by and large, we don't do so great with that, with really just feeling the ouch of it. That's my experience. That matches my experience. That we could really turn toward our experience more. I think we tend to kind of, it's like a skipping stone bouncing off along the surface of the water. We need to keep letting that stone slow down until it sinks in and settles in. We aren't so good at that part, I don't think. No matter where we are, each of us is, we can all get better at doing that, I think, and allowing ourselves to settle into our experience more fully. You know, there's this, becoming a better person. What tyranny there. Instead, you know, how much better do we have to get? You know, what's going to happen? Oh, just that much?
Or this much.
Or this much, yeah.
Like a fish.
Right, exactly. It's a fish story. That one is definitely a fish story. When we turn toward our experience, when we turn toward it, I think that's a big act of letting go. And I don't want to confuse this. I think sometimes we get confused about letting go. We see letting go as meaning, okay, I'm letting go. Letting go does not mean getting rid of. You know, that's aversion. We know that one well too. Okay? Letting go means actually, it's more like letting be. Letting be and being with. Can I bear this? Just one iota more. Or what actually is this here? Oh, I'm telling a story again about myself. Oh, this is a fantasy. Oh, what's the energy of this like? Oh, I feel kind of puffed up right now. Or, oh, this story is about me getting picked on again. Oh, and I'm just angry and I'm ready to fight. Oh, boy, this reminds me of me with my sister when I was young. when I was 4 years old. Everything starts from when we're 4 years old or younger anyway. Okay. So another quote from Ajahn Sumedho. As kind of he's talking about how we can turn toward it, then we can be with grasping in a clear but non-judgmental way. That's really key. This is a heart inclination rather than a technique. And awareness is brought to the fore through patience and kindness. So you give up the ideas of who you are and how things should be, and instead breathe patience and kindness into the grasping and agitation. Breathe patience and kindness into the grasping and agitation. You know? And we can start with the small stuff. Yeah? That's why we practice. So, this is a practice. As he says, it's not a technique, it's more of a heart inclination, but learning to work in this way. There are stages. We will get better at it over time. At first, it may be more intellectual, seeing how we're doing it. Yeah? But we can't actually stay fully present with the emotion of it. So we notice that. Absolutely no harm in that. That's an important stage. Yeah? And then at the next stage, maybe we're able to be with the emotion a bit more. It's very useful. Really useful, and that's part of the deepening of practice. And then at a deeper level still, maybe it's being able to be with that experience just as an energetic experience that's happening, as the energy that's flowing through, and really being able to be with it on that level. One more quote from Suchitto. Being willing to acknowledge and meet the floods takes great heart. Ajahn Chah, he was Ajahn Sumedho's teacher and Jack Kornfield's teacher. Ajahn Chah said that being a monk is knowing about letting go, but being unable to do so for 90% of the time. Okay? So, let that give you some sense of, you know, how much you need to be able to do this in order to be quote-unquote successful. Mm-hmm. Let go of that self-improvement project. And instead, just try to be with the experience more fully. Okay, so what I want to do now is have people break into groups. So why don't we have groups of four or five? Let's have groups of four. I think we can do groups of four. And I want people to break up into your groups of four. And I want you to talk about just what you know, but what what your experience of holding on is like, what your experience of grasping is like, and how you know that. I encourage you to, whatever you know about it as an experience in the body, as the felt sense, is great, but whatever you know about it, all right? And what is it like when you let go? So what is it like in the mind and heart and in the body? Holding on, grasping, and what is it in the felt experience of letting go? Okay? So let's break into groups. I encourage you not to sit with your partner or best friend unless you're new here or you really want to do that. You go right ahead. So let's break up, and we'll have about 10 minutes in the small groups. So actually I have a little bit, I have just a smidge more instruction. What I'd like to do is have each person have... does anybody have a timepiece in each group? Does each group have a timepiece? Timekeeper? Okay. What I'd like to do is have each person get at least 1 minute where they're speaking. Okay, 1 to 2 minutes where they're speaking and everybody else is just listening. If you're a listener, you're resting in your body and you're listening from the heart with your full attention. And then after 2 minutes, you switch. You go to the next person. You just go around to the next person. Take a moment in silence. Then you go to the next person. There's a question?
I'm sorry. Are we talking that that it's the letting go is renunciation?
Yes.
Grasping.
Yes. So holding on or grasping, and then the letting go.
Mark, is there any way you can do that every 2 minutes so we're not...
Sure, I will do that. Or I will try to do that.
Thank you.
Switch, that's time to switch.
Thank you.
So now you have some time for conversation for another few minutes, and then I'll ring the bell at the end.
Exactly.
Stay in silence, go back into silence. Anybody want to share anything from that group, from their groups? Actually, ideally, I want you to share your own experience. I don't want you to share what somebody else shared. It's their choice. As to what they share.
Well, one of the things I shared is that I noticed that sometimes when I'm grasping after something I want, whether it's something physical or something, an idea, something I want in my life, that I tend to get kind of tunnel vision. I get so determined, you know, I'm fixated on that thing that I realize that it kind of actually is a detriment because you don't end up seeing all the other possibilities. Once you decide, you know, this is what I've got to have, you kind of get what else when you're not allowing all those other possibilities to come in. So it really is not necessarily to your advantage to kind of grasp.
Anybody know this experience? Okay. Thank you. Yes?
I just want to say from hearing the other three people that I just felt this, sense of, wow, we all, because they had different explanations, but they were, in each one, meaning. Mm-hmm. And then that just sense of, wow, how we suffer like that, and that's just part of it. So it was a very kind of...
Sounds like a real insight for
yeah,
you. Yeah,
helpful.
Seeing that.
Yeah,
it's wonderful.
One thing I took away from it is like grasping seems such like a mental activity, and the enunciation is... When you're more in your body... Mm. It's easier to let go when you can just be in your seat. Mm. And then grasping is really, I mean, you're just up in your head planning that next thing, getting your tunnel vision, mm-hmm. not seeing any options because you're just grabbing on tight.
I was thinking, how sometimes I feel like I'm like one step ahead of myself when I'm grasping. I'm like not here. I'm just out there. And for simple things, I talked about eating burrito. It's also when my son was here for just a couple of days and he was going to be doing other things. And I really wanted to have some time with him. But I had to, like, he has friends. He has things he needs to do. And I needed to let that grasping of wanting to let him go so he can enjoy himself. And then to remind myself to be gracious for... When he's there, mm-hmm. you know, to be present for that, to enjoy the moment. Because if I'm grasping, I'm not enjoying anything. You know, it's because I'm not even here. it's really interesting. I've gotten better at recognizing that energetic response where I feel like I'm like here. It's like here, and it's very helpful. Would really be nice if it happened less often.
Yeah, well.
But you know, if I can catch myself, I guess it's a good thing.
Yeah. I don't know. I guess a lot of us would probably like it if it happened less often. It's kind of part of the bargain.
I think the carrot's always there.
The carrot.
Okay.
Right there. Yeah. Okay.
shared that I'm holding on to self-image that's outdated. And I've had decades to develop the old self-image. And the new self-image is a whole new ballgame. And renunciation to me and letting go is realizing what's true now is what's true now. It may not be true tomorrow, and it may never be like it was. But that image of being the able-bodied, perfectly healthy, everything's always working right person, I mean, it's hard to let go of that image that had decades to build.
Yeah.
And I saw that construct itself, but I don't want to construct a new self with the me I am today, because I want to be able to be more fluid, because even that's going to change.
Right, right.
So it's really interesting. It's a practice for me to learn to let go of that self-constructed image of
right.
who I think I am.
And it's not that you'll stop creating an image of who you are, you know, or that any of us will. It's not that we're going to stop having an ego. That's a totally separate thing. But we can hold it more loosely, kind of as you're talking about, Patty, so that we're not so attached and so driven by these ideas of who we are and our ideas and, you know, this kind of thing that we do all the time. Yeah.
This whole thing reminds me of there was a milestone that my father wanted to commemorate and celebrate. He gave me a watch, and he had it engraved into it. May your reach always exceed your grasp. And it reminds me that that's the culture that we're in, and these mottos and sayings, you know. Where was the watch that said, may you enjoy the present?
Maybe that's
the watch broke after a couple of weeks. The engraving stayed on.
Maybe that was the other side. Maybe that was the second hand. Tick, tick, tick. Yeah. I don't know. Okay. Well, I certainly hope that this gave you, and it sounds like, as usual with this group, there's so much wisdom in this room. But I hope the talk and the discussion gave you or helped to deepen your sense of nekama, of what that means, and of the power of renunciation or letting go. And we'll give you the idea or the possibility of deepening your exploration of this, of how we hold on, how we get caught in grasping, and how we let go. So that we can have some more measure of that in the future. Mm-hmm. Let's sit for just a little bit.